The cold was deep enough that I wondered if I might have already been dead in my human body, or well on my way to it. I laid my palm flat on the door. The sucking and questioning and draining were worse this time. So much worse, and I had to brace my tattooed hand on the door to keep from falling to my knees and crying out as it ransacked me. I am Summer. I am Summer. I am Summer. I didn't shift into Tarquin this time. Didn't need to. A click and groan, and the lead door rolled into the wall, water merging and splashing as I stumbled back into Amryn's waiting arms. Nasty, nasty lock, she hissed, shuddering not just from the water. My head was spinning. Another lock, and I might very well pass out. But the fey light bobbed into the chamber beyond us, and we both halted. The water had not merged with another source, but rather halted against an invisible threshold. The dry chamber beyond was empty save for a round dais and pedestal, and a small lead box atop it. Amryn waved a tentative hand over the air where the water just stopped. Then, satisfied there were no waiting wards or tricks, she stepped beyond, dripping onto the gray stones as she stood in the chamber, wincing a bit, and beckoned. Wading as fast as I could, I followed her, half falling onto the floor as my body adjusted to sudden air. I turned, and sure enough, the water was a black wall, as if there were a pane of glass keeping it in place. Let's be quick about it, she said, and I didn't disagree. We both carefully surveyed the chamber, floors, walls, ceilings, no signs of hidden mechanisms or triggers. Though no larger than an ordinary book, the lead box seemed to gobble up the fey light, and inside it, whispering, the seal of Tarquin's power, and the book. And now I heard, clear as if Amryn herself whispered it, "Who are you? What are you? Come closer. Let me smell you. Let me see you." We paused on opposite sides of the pedestal, the fey light hovering over the lid. "No wards," Amryn said, her voice barely more than the scrape of her boots on the stone. "No spells. You have to remove it. Carry it out." The thought of touching that box, getting close to that thing inside it. "The tide is coming back in," Amryn added, surveying the ceiling. "That soon?" "Perhaps the sea knows. Perhaps the sea is the High Lord's servant." And if we were caught down here when the water came in? I did not think my little water animals would help. Panic writhed in my gut, but I pushed it away and steeled myself, lifting my chin. The box would be heavy and cold. "Who are you? Who are you? Who are you?" I flexed my fingers and cracked my neck. "I am Summer. I am sea and sun and green things." "Come on, come on," Amryn murmured. Above, water trickled over the stones. "Who are you? Who are you? Who are you?" "I am Tarquin. I am High Lord. I am your master." The box quieted, as if that were answer enough. I snatched the box off the pedestal, the metal biting into my hands, the power an oily smear through my blood. An ancient, cruel voice hissed, "Liar," and the door slammed shut. Chapter 37. "No!" Amryn screamed, at the door in an instant, her fist a radiant forge as she slammed it into the lead once, twice, and above, the rush and gargle of water tumbling downstairs, filling the chamber. "No, no, no!" I reached the door, sliding the box into the wide inside pocket of my leather jacket, while Amryn's blazing palm flattened against the door, burning, heating the metal, swirls and whorls radiating out through it as if they were a language all her own. And then, the door burst open, only for a flood to come crashing in. I grappled for the threshold, but missed as the water slammed me back, sweeping me under the dark, icy surface. The cold stole the breath from my lungs. "Find the floor, find the floor." My feet connected and I pushed up, gulping down air, scanning the dim chamber for Amryn. She was clutching the threshold, eyes on me, hand out, glowing bright. The water already flowed up to my breasts, and I rushed to her, fighting the onslaught flooding the chamber, willing that new strength into my body, my arms. the water became easier, as if that kernel of power soothed its current, its wrath, but Amren was now climbing up the threshold. "You have it?" she shouted over the roaring water. I nodded, and I realized her outstretched hand wasn't for me, but for the door she'd forced back into the wall, holding it away until I could get out. I shoved through the archway, Amren slipping around the threshold, just as the door rolled shut again, so violently that I wondered at the power she'd used to push it back. The only downside was that the water in the hall now had much less space to fill. "Go," she said, but I didn't wait for her approval before I grabbed her, hooking her feet around my stomach as I hoisted her onto my back. "Just do what you have to do," I gritted out, neck craned above the rising water. Not too much farther to the stairs that were now a cascade. Where the hell was Resand? But Amren held out a palm in front of us, and the water buckled and trembled. Not a clear path, but a break in the current. I directed that kernel of Tarquin's power, my power now, toward it. The water calmed further, straining to obey my command. I ran, gripping her thighs probably hard enough to bruise. Step by step, water now raging down, now at my jaw, now at my mouth. But I hit the stairs, almost slipping on the slick step, and Amren's gasp stopped me cold. Not a gasp of shock, but a gasp for air, as a wall of water poured down the stairs, as if a mighty wave had swept over the entire sight. Even my own mastery over the element could do nothing against it. I had enough time to gulp down air, to grab Amren's legs and brace myself, and watch as that door atop the stairs slid shut, sealing us in a watery tomb. I was dead. I knew I was dead, and there was no way out of it. I had consumed my last breath, and I would be aware for every second until my lungs gave out, and my body betrayed me, and I swallowed that fatal mouthful of water. Amren beat at my hands until I let go, until I swam after her, trying to calm my panicking heart, my lungs, trying to convince them to make each second count as Amren reached the door and slammed her palm into it. Symbols flared again and again, but the door held. I reached her, shoving my body into the door over and over, and the lead dented beneath my shoulders. Then I had talons, not claws, and I was slicing and punching at the metal. My lungs were on fire. My lungs were seizing. Amren pounded on the door, that bit of phalite guttering, as if it were counting down her heartbeats. I had to take a breath, had to open my mouth and take a breath, had to ease the burning. Then the door was ripped away, and the phalite remained bright enough for me to see the three beautiful ethereal faces hissing through fish's teeth as their spindly webbed fingers snatched us out of the stairs and into their frogskin arms. Water wraiths. But I couldn't stand it, and as those spiny hands grabbed my arm, I opened my mouth, water shoving in, cutting off thought and sound and breath. My body seized, those talons vanishing. Debris and seaweed and water shot past me, and I had the vague sense of being hurtled through the water, so fast the water burned beneath my eyelids. And then hot air, but my lungs were full of water as a fist slammed into my stomach, and I vomited water across the waves. I gulped down air, blinking at the bruised purple and blushing pink of the morning sky. A sputter and gasp not too far from me, and I treaded water as I turned in the bay to see Amren vomiting as well, but alive. And in the waves between us, onyx hair plastered to their strange heads like helmets, the water wraiths floated, staring with dark, large eyes. The sun was rising beyond them, the city encircling us stirring. The one in the center said, "Our sister's debt is paid." And then they were gone. Amren was already swimming for the distant mainland shore. Praying they didn't come back and make a meal of us, I hurried after her, trying to keep my movements small to avoid detection. We both reached a quiet sandy cove and collapsed. A shadow blocked out the sun, and a boot toed my calf. "What?" said Resand, still in battle black. "Are you two doing?" I opened my eyes to find Amren hoisting herself up on her elbows. "Where the hell were you?" she demanded. You two set off every damned trigger in the place. I was hunting down each guard who went to sound the alarm. My throat was ravaged, and sand tickled my cheeks, my bare hands. I thought you had it covered, he said to her. Amryn hissed, That place, or that damned book, nearly nullified my powers. We almost drowned. His gaze shot to me. I didn't feel it through the bond. It probably nullified that too, you stupid bastard, Amryn snapped. His eyes flickered. Did you get it? Not at all concerned that we were half-drowned and had very nearly been dead. I touched my jacket, the heavy metal lump within. Good, Rhys said, and I looked behind him at the sudden urgency in his tone. Sure enough, in the castle across the bay, people were darting about. I missed some guards, he gritted out, grabbed both our arms, and we vanished. The dark wind was cold and roaring, and I had barely enough strength to cling to him. It gave out entirely, along with Amryn's, as we landed in the townhouse foyer, and we both collapsed to the wood floor, spraying sand and water on the carpet. Cassian shouted from the dining room behind us, What the hell? I glared up at Rhysand, who merely stepped toward the breakfast table. I'm waiting for an explanation, too, he merely said to wide-eyed Cassian, Asriel, and more. But I turned to Amryn, who was still hissing on the floor. Her red-rimmed eyes narrowed. How? During the tithe, the Water Wraith emissary said they had no gold, no food to pay. They were starving. Every word ached, and I thought I might vomit again. He'd deserve it if I puked all over the carpet, though he'd probably take it from my wages. So I gave her some of my jewelry to pay her dues. She swore that she and her sisters would never forget the kindness.
Can someone explain, please? Moore called from the room beyond.
We remained on the floor as Amryn began quietly laughing, her small body shaking.
What?
I demanded. Only an immortal with a mortal heart would have given one of those horrible beasts the money. It's so... Amryn laughed again, her dark hair plastered with sand and seaweed. For a moment, she even looked human.
Whatever luck you live by, girl, thank the cauldron for it.
The others were all watching, but I felt a chuckle whisper out of me, followed by a laugh as rasping and raw as my lungs, but a real laugh, perhaps edged with hysteria and profound relief. We looked at each other and laughed again. Ladies, Rhysand purred, a silent order. I groaned as I got to my feet, sand falling everywhere, and offered a hand to Amryn to rise. Her grip was firm, but her quicksilver eyes were surprisingly tender as she squeezed it before snapping her fingers. We were both instantly clean and warm, our clothes dry, save for a wet patch around my breast, where that box waited. My companions were solemn-faced as I approached and reached inside that pocket. The metal bit into my fingers, so cold it burned. I dropped it onto the table. It thudded, and they all recoiled, swearing. Rhys crooked a finger at me.
One last task, Feyre. Unlock it, please.
My knees were buckling, my head spinning and mouth bone dry and full of salt and grit, but I wanted to be rid of it. So I slid into a chair, tugging that hateful box to me, and placed a hand on top.
Hello, liar,
it purred. Hello, I said softly.
Will you read me?
No. The others didn't say a word, though I felt their confusion shimmering in the room. Only Rhys and Amryn watched me closely.
Open,
I said silently.
Say please.
Please, I said. The box, the book, was silent. Then it said,
Like calls to like.
Open, I gritted out.
Unmade and made, made and unmade, that is the cycle. Like calls to like.
I pushed my hand harder, so tired I didn't care about the thoughts tumbling out, the bits and pieces that were a part of and not part of me. Heat and water and ice and light and shadow.
Cursebreaker,
it called to me, and the box clicked open. I sagged back in my chair, grateful for the roaring fire in the nearby fireplace. Cassian's hazel eyes were dark.
I never want to hear that voice again.
Well, you will, Rhysand said blandly, lifting the lid, because you're coming with us to see those mortal queens as soon as they deign to visit. I was too tired to think about that, about what we had left to do. I peered into the box. It was not a book, not with paper and leather. It had been formed of dark metal plates bound on 3 rings of gold, silver, and bronze, each word carved with painstaking precision, in an alphabet I could not recognize. Yes, it indeed turned out my reading lessons were unnecessary. Rhys left it inside the box as we all peered in, then recoiled. Only Amryn remained staring at it, the blood drained from her face entirely. What language is that? Moore asked. I thought Amryn's hands might have been shaking, but she shoved them into her pockets. It is no language of this world. Only Rhys was unfazed by the shock on her face, as if he'd suspected what the language might be, why he had picked her to be a part of this hunt.
What is it, then?
Asriel asked. She stared and stared at the book, as if it were a ghost, as if it were a miracle, and said,
It is the Lashon HaKodesh, the holy tongue.
Those quicksilver eyes shifted to Rhysand, and I realized she'd understood, too, why she'd gone. Rhysand said,
I heard a legend that it was written in a tongue of mighty beings who feared the cauldron's power and made the book to combat it, mighty beings who were here and then vanished. You are the only one who can uncode it.
It was Moore who warned, Don't play those sorts of games, Rhysand. But he shook his head.
Not a game. It was a gamble that Amryn would be able to read it, and a lucky one.
Amryn's nostrils flared delicately, and for a moment, I wondered if she might throttle him for not telling her his suspicions, that the book might indeed be more than the key to our own salvation. Rhys smiled at her in a way that said he'd be willing to let her try. Even Cassian slid a hand toward his fighting knife. But then, Rhysand said,
I thought, too, that the book might also contain the spell to free you and send you home, if they were the ones who wrote it in the first place.
Amryn's throat bobbed, slightly. Cassian said, Shit. Rhys went on,
I did not tell you my suspicions, because I did not want to get your hopes up. But if the legends about the language were indeed right, perhaps you might find what you've been looking for, Amryn.
I need the other piece before I can begin decoding it.
Her voice was raw.
Hopefully our request to the mortal queens will be answered soon,
he said, frowning at the sand and water staining the foyer.
And hopefully, the next encounter will go better than this one.
Her mouth tightened, yet her eyes were blazing bright.
Thank you.
10,000 years in exile, alone. Moore sighed, a loud dramatic sound no doubt meant to break the heavy silence, and complained about wanting the full story of what happened. But Asriel said,
Even if the book can nullify the cauldron, there's Jurian to contend with.
We all looked at him.
That's the piece that doesn't fit,
Asriel clarified, tapping a scarred finger on the table.
Why resurrect him in the first place? And how does the king keep him bound? What does the king have over Jurian to keep him loyal?
I'd considered that,
Rhys said, taking a seat across from me at the table, right between his two brothers. Of course he had considered it. Rhys shrugged.
Jurian was obsessive in his pursuits of things. He died with many of those goals left unfinished.
Moore's face paled a bit. If he suspects Miriam is alive?
Odds are, Jurian believes Miriam is gone, Rhys said.
And who better to raise his former lover than a king with a cauldron able to resurrect the dead?
Would Jurian ally with Highburn just because he thinks Miriam is dead and wants her back?
Cassian said, bracing his arms on the table.
He'd do it to get revenge on Drakon for winning her heart,
Rhys said. He shook his head.
We'll discuss this later.
And I made a note to ask him who these people were, what their history was, to ask Rhys why he'd never hinted under the mountain that he knew the man behind the eye on Amarantha's ring. After I'd had a bath, and water, and a nap. But they all looked to me and Amryn again, still waiting for the story. Brushing a few grains of sand off, I let Amryn launch into the tale, each word more unbelievable than the last. Across the table, I lifted my gaze from my clothes and found Rhys's eyes already on me. I inclined my head slightly and lowered my shield only long enough to say down the bond, "To the dreams that are answered." A heartbeat later, a sensual caress trailed along my mental shields, a polite request. I let it drop, let him in, and his voice filled my head. "To the huntresses who remember to reach back for those less fortunate, and water wraiths who swim very, very fast." Chapter 38. Amryn took the book to wherever it was she lived in Valaris, leaving the five of us to eat. While Rhys told them of our visit to the summer court, I managed to scarf down breakfast before the exhaustion of staying up all night, unlocking those doors, and very nearly dying hit me. When I awoke, the house was empty, the afternoon sunlight warm and golden, and the day so unusually warm and lovely that I brought a book down to the small garden in the back. The sun eventually shifted, shading the garden to the point of frigidness again. Not quite willing to give up the sun yet, I trudged the three levels to the rooftop patio to watch it set. Of course, Rhysand was already lounging in one of the white-painted iron chairs, an arm slung over the back while his other hand idly gripped a glass of some sort of liquor, a crystal decanter full of it set on the table before him. His wings were draped behind him on the tile floor, and I wondered if he was also taking advantage of the unusually mild day to sun them as I cleared my throat. "I know you're there," he said without turning from the view of the Sidra and the red-gold sea beyond. I scowled. "If you want to be alone, I can go." He jerked his chin toward the empty seat at the iron table. Not a glowing invitation, but I sat down. There was a wood box beside the decanter, and I might have thought it was something for whatever he was drinking had I not noticed the dagger fashioned of mother-of-pearl in the lid, had I not sworn I could smell the sea and heat and soil that was Tarquin. "What is that?" Rhys drained his glass, held up a hand, the decanter floating to him on a phantom wind, and poured himself another knuckle's length before he spoke. "I debated it for a good while, you know," he said, staring out at his city, "whether I should just ask Tarquin for the book. But I thought that he might very well say no, then sell the information to the highest bidder. I thought he might say yes, and it'd still wind up with too many people knowing our plans and the potential for that information to get out. And at the end of the day, I needed the why of our mission to remain secret for as long as possible." He drank again and dragged a hand through his blue-black hair. "I didn't like stealing from him. I didn't like hurting his guards. I didn't like vanishing without a word when, ambition or no, he did truly want an alliance, maybe even friendship. No other High Lords have ever bothered or dared. But I think Tarquin wanted to be my friend." I glanced between him and the box and repeated, "What is that?" "Open it." I gingerly flipped back the lid. Inside, nestled on a bed of white velvet, three rubies glimmered, each the size of a chicken egg, each so pure and richly colored that they seemed crafted of blood rubies, he said. I pulled back the fingers that had been inching toward the stones. "In the summer court, when a grave insult has been committed, they send a blood ruby to the offender. An official declaration that there is a price on their head, that they are now hunted and will soon be dead. The box arrived at the Court of Nightmares an hour ago."
Mother above. I take it one of these has my name on it, and yours, and Amryn's.
The lid flipped shut on a dark wind.
"I made a mistake," he said.
I opened my mouth, but he went on.
"I should have wiped the minds of the guards and let them continue on. Instead, I knocked them out. It's been a while since I had to do any sort of physical defending like that, and I was so focused on my Illyrian training that I forgot the other arsenal at my disposal. They probably awoke and went right to him."
He would have noticed the book was missing soon enough.
"We could have denied that we stole it and chalked it up to coincidence,"
He drained his glass.
I made a mistake.
It's not the end of the world if you do that every now and then.
You've been told you are now public enemy number one of the summer court, and you're fine with it.
No, but I don't blame you. He loosed a breath, staring out at his city as the warmth of the day succumbed to winter's bite once more. It didn't matter to him. Perhaps you could return the book once we've neutralized the cauldron. Apologize. Rhys snorted.
No. Amryn will get that book for as long as she needs it.
Then make it up to him in some way. Clearly you wanted to be his friend as much as he wanted to be yours. You wouldn't be so upset otherwise.
I'm not upset. I'm pissed off.
Semantics. He gave me a half smile.
Feuds like the one we just started can last centuries, millennia. If that's the cost of stopping this war, helping Amryn, I'll pay it.
He'd pay with everything he had, I realized. Any hopes for himself, his own happiness. Do the others know about the blood rubies?
Asriel was the one who brought them to me. I'm debating how I'll tell Amryn.
Why? Darkness filled those remarkable eyes.
Because her answer would be to go to Adriada and wipe the city off the map.
I shuddered.
Exactly, he said.
I stared out at Valaris with him, listening to the sounds of the day wrapping up and the night unfolding. Adriada felt rudimentary by comparison. I understand, I said, rubbing some warmth into my now chilled hands. Why you did what you had to in order to protect this city. Imagining the destruction that had been wreaked upon Adriada here in Valaris made my blood run cold. His eyes slid to me, wary and dull. I swallowed. And I understand why you will do anything to keep it safe during the times ahead.
And your point is?
A bad day. This was a bad day, I realized, for him. I didn't scowl at the bite in his words. Get through this war, Rhysand, and then worry about Tarquin and the Blood Rubies. Nullify the cauldron, stop the king from shattering the wall and enslaving the human realm again, and then we'll figure out the rest after.
You sound as if you plan to stay here for a while.
A bland but edged question. I can find my own lodging, if that's what you're referring to. Maybe I'll use that generous paycheck to get myself something lavish. Come on, wink at me, play with me, just stop looking like that. He only said,
spare your paycheck. Your name has already been added to the list of those approved to use my household credit. Buy whatever you wish. Buy yourself a whole damn house if you want.
I ground my teeth, and maybe it was panic or desperation, but I said sweetly, I saw a pretty shop across the Sidra the other day. It sold what looked to be lots of lacy little things. Am I allowed to buy that on your credit too, or does that come out of my personal funds? Those violet eyes again drifted to me.
I'm not in the mood.
There was no humor, no mischief. I could go warm myself by a fire inside, but he had stayed and fought for me. Week after week he'd fought for me, even when I had no reaction, even when I had barely been able to speak or bring myself to care if I lived or died or ate or starved. I couldn't leave him to his own dark thoughts, his own guilt. He'd shouldered them alone long enough. So I held his gaze. I never knew Illyrians were such morose drunks.
I'm not drunk. I'm drinking, he said,
his teeth flashing a bit. Again, semantics. I leaned back in my seat, wishing I'd brought my coat. Maybe you should have slept with Cressida after all, so you could both be sad and lonely together.
So you're entitled to have as many bad days as you want, but I can't get a few hours.
Oh, take however long you want to mope. I was going to invite you to come shopping with me for said lacy little unmentionables, but sit up here forever if you have to. He didn't respond. I went on. Maybe I'll send a few to Tarquin, with an offer to wear them for him if he forgives us. Maybe he'll take those blood rubies right back. His mouth barely tugged up at the corners.
He'd see that as a taunt.
I gave him a few smiles and he handed over a family heirloom.
I bet he'd give me the keys to his territory if I showed up wearing those undergarments.
Someone thinks mighty highly of herself.
Why shouldn't I? You seem to have difficulty not staring at me day and night. There it was, a kernel of truth and a question.
Am I supposed to deny,
he drawled, but something sparked in those eyes,
that I find you attractive?
You've never said it.
I've told you many times, and quite frequently, how attractive I find you.
I shrugged, even as I thought of all those times, when I'd dismissed them as teasing compliments, nothing more. Well, maybe you should do a better job of it.
The gleam in his eyes turned into something predatory. A thrill went through me as he braced his powerful arms on the table and purred. Is that a challenge, Farah?
I held that predator's gaze, the gaze of the most powerful male in Prithian. Is it?
His pupils flared. Gone was the quiet sadness, the isolated guilt. Only that lethal focus on me, on my mouth, on the bob of my throat as I tried to keep my breathing even.
He said, slow and soft,
Why don't we go down to that store right now, Farah, so you can try on those lacy little things, so I can help you pick which one to send to Tarquin?
My toes curled inside my fleece-lined slippers. Such a dangerous line we walked together. The ice-kissed night wind rustled our hair. But Reese's gaze cut skyward, and a heartbeat later, Azriel shot from the clouds like a spear of darkness. I wasn't sure whether I should be relieved or not, but I left before Azriel could land, giving the High Lord and his spymaster some privacy. As soon as I entered the dimness of the stairwell, the heat rushed from me, leaving a sick, cold feeling in my stomach. There was flirting, and then there was this. I had loved Tamlin, loved him so much I had not minded destroying myself for it, for him. And then everything had happened, and now I was here, and I might have very well gone to that pretty shop with Rhysand. I could almost see what would have happened. The shop ladies would have been polite, a bit nervous, and given us privacy as Rhys sat on the settee in the back of the shop, while I went behind the curtained-off chamber to try on the red lace set I'd eyed thrice now. And when I emerged, mustering up more bravado than I felt, Rhys would have looked me up and down, twice. And he would have kept staring at me, as he informed the shop ladies that the store was closed, and they should all come back tomorrow, and we'd leave the tab on the counter. I would have stood there, naked save for scraps of red lace, while we listened to the quick, discreet sounds of them closing up and leaving. And he would have looked at me the entire time, at my breasts, visible through the lace, at the plane of my stomach, now finally looking less starved and taut, at the sweep of my hips and thighs, between them. Then he would have met my gaze again, and crooked a finger with a single murmured, "Come here." And I would have walked to him, aware of every step, as I at last stopped in front of where he sat, between his legs. His hands would have slid to my waist, the calluses scraping my skin. Then he'd have tugged me a bit closer, before leaning in to brush a kiss to my navel, his tongue. I swore as I slammed into the post of the stairwell landing, and I blinked as the world returned, and I realized... I glared at the eye tattooed in my hand, and hissed both with my tongue and that silent voice within the bond itself. Prick. In the back of my mind, a sensual male voice chuckled with midnight laughter. My face burning, cursing him for the vision he'd slipped past my mental shields. I reinforced them as I entered my room, and took a very, very cold bath. I ate with Moore that night beside the crackling fire in the townhouse dining room, Rhys and the others off somewhere, and when she finally asked why I kept scowling every time Rhysand's name was mentioned, I told her about the vision he'd sent into my mind. She laughed until wine came out of her nose, and when I scowled at her, she told me I should be proud. When Rhys was prepared to brood, it took nothing short of a miracle to get him out of it. I tried to ignore the slightest sense of triumph, even as I climbed into bed.
I was just starting to drift off, well past 2 in the morning, thanks to chatting with Moore on the couch in the living room for hours and hours about all the great and terrible places she'd seen, when the house let out a groan. Like the wood itself was being warped, the house began to moan and shudder, the colored glass lights in my room tinkling. I jolted upright, twisting to the open window. Clear skies, nothing. Nothing but the darkness leaking into my room from the hall door. I knew that darkness. A kernel of it lived in me. It rushed in from the cracks of the door like a flood. The house shuddered again. I vaulted from bed, yanked the door open, and darkness swept past me on a phantom wind, full of stars and flapping wings and pain. So much pain, and despair, and guilt, and fear. I hurtled into the hall, utterly blind in the impenetrable dark. But there was a thread between us, and I followed it to where I knew his room was. I fumbled for the handle, then more night and stars and wind poured out, my hair whipping around me, and I lifted an arm to shield my face as I edged into the room. Resand! No response, but I could feel him there, feel that lifeline between us. I followed it until my shins banged into what had to be his bed. Resand, I said over the wind and dark. The house shook, the floorboards clattering under my feet. I patted the bed, feeling sheets and blankets and down, and then a hard, taut male body. But the bed was enormous, and I couldn't get a grip on him. Resand! Around and around the darkness swirled, the beginning and end of the world. I scrambled onto the bed, lunging for him, feeling what was his arm, then his stomach, then his shoulders. His skin was freezing as I gripped his shoulders and shouted his name. No response, and I slid a hand up his neck, to his mouth, to make sure he was still breathing, that this wasn't his power floating away from him. Icy breath hit my palm, and, bracing myself, I rose up on my knees, aiming blindly, and slapped him. My palm stung, but he didn't move. I hit him again, pulling on that bond between us, shouting his name down it like it was a tunnel, banging on that wall of ebony adamant within his mind, roaring at it. A crack in the dark. And then his hands were on me, flipping me, pinning me with expert skill to the mattress, a taloned hand at my throat. I went still. Resand, I breathed. Reese, I said through the bond, putting a hand against that inner shield. The dark shuddered. I threw my own power out, black to black, soothing his darkness, the rough edges, willing it to calm, to soften. My darkness sang his own a lullaby, a song my wet nurse had hummed when my mother had shoved me into her arms to go back to attending parties. It was a dream, I said. His hand was so cold. It was a dream. Again, the darkness paused. I sent my own veils of night brushing up against it, running star-flecked hands down it. And for a heartbeat, the inky blackness cleared enough that I saw his face above me, drawn, lips pale, violet eyes wide, scanning. Feyre, I said. I'm Feyre. His breathing was jagged, uneven. I gripped the wrist that held my throat, held but didn't hurt. You were dreaming. I willed that darkness inside myself to echo it, to sing those raging fears to sleep, to brush up against that ebony wall within his mind, gentle and soft. Then, like snow shaken from a tree, his darkness fell away, taking mine with it. Moonlight poured in, and the sounds of the city. His room was similar to mine, the bed so big it must have been built to accommodate wings, but all tastefully, comfortably appointed, and he was naked above me, utterly naked. I didn't dare look lower than the tattooed panes of his chest.
Feyre,
he said, his voice hoarse, as if he'd been screaming. Yes, I said. He studied my face, the taloned hand at my throat, and released me immediately. I lay there, staring up at where he now knelt on the bed, rubbing his hands over his face. My traitorous eyes indeed dared to look lower than his chest, but my attention snagged on the twin tattoos on each of his knees, a towering mountain crowned by 3 stars, beautiful but brutal somehow. You were having a nightmare, I said,
easing into a sitting position. Like some dam had been cracked open inside me, I glanced at my hand and willed it to vanish into shadow. It did. Half a thought scattered the darkness again. His hands, however, still ended in long black talons, and his feet, they ended in claws too. The wings were out, slumped down behind him, and I wondered how close he'd been to fully shifting into that beast he'd once told me he hated. He lowered his hands, talons fading into fingers.
I'm sorry.
That's why you're staying here, not at the house. You don't want the others seeing this.
I normally keep it contained to my room. I'm sorry it woke you.
I fisted my hands in my lap to keep from touching him. How often does it happen? Reese's violet eyes met mine, and I knew the answer before he said,
As often as you.
I swallowed hard. What did you dream of tonight? He shook his head, looking toward the window, to where snow had dusted the nearby rooftops.
There are memories from under the mountain, Feyre, that are best left unshared, even with you.
He'd shared enough horrific things with me that they had to be beyond nightmares then. But I put a hand on his elbow, naked body and all. When you want to talk, let me know. I won't tell the others. I made to slither off the bed, but he grabbed my hand, keeping it against his arm.
Thank you.
I studied the hand, the ravaged face. Such pain lingered there, an exhaustion, the face he never let anyone see. I pushed up onto my knees and kissed his cheek, his skin warm and soft beneath my mouth. It was over before it started, but how many nights had I wanted someone to do the same for me? His eyes were a bit wide as I pulled away, and he didn't stop me as I eased off the bed. I was almost out the door when I turned back to him. Reese still knelt, wings drooping across the white sheets, head bowed, his tattoos stark against his golden skin. A dark fallen prince. The painting flashed into my mind, flashed and stayed there, glimmering before it faded. But it remained, shining faintly in that hole inside my chest. The hole that was slowly starting to heal over. Chapter 39. Do you think you can decode it once we get the other half? I said to Amryn, lingering by the front door of her apartment the next afternoon. She owned the top floor of a three-story building, the sloped ceiling ending on either side in a massive window. One looked out on the Sidra, the other on a tree-lined city square. The entire apartment consisted of one giant room. The faded oak floors were covered in equally worn carpets. Furniture was scattered about as if she constantly moved it for whatever purpose. Only her bed, a large four-poster monstrosity canopied in gossamer, seemed set in a permanent place against the wall. There was no kitchen, only a long table and a hearth burning hot enough to make the room near stifling. The dusting of snow from the night before had vanished in the dry winter sun by mid-morning, the temperature crisp but mild enough that the walk here had been invigorating. Seated on the floor before a low-lying table scattered with papers, Amryn looked up from the gleaming metal of the book. Her face was paler than usual, her lips wan.
It's been a long while since I used this language. I want to master it again before tackling the book. Hopefully by then, those haughty queens will have given us their share.
And how long will relearning the language take?
Didn't his darkness fill you in?
She went back to the book. I strode for the long wooden table and set the package I'd brought on the scratched surface. A few pints of hot blood, straight from the butcher. I'd nearly run here to keep them from going cold. No, I said, taking out the containers. He didn't. Reese had already been gone by breakfast, though one of his notes had been on a bedside table.
Thank you for last night,
was all it had said. No pen to write a response, but I'd hunted down one anyway and had written back,
What do the tattooed stars and mountain on your knees mean?
The paper had vanished a heartbeat later. When it hadn't returned, I'd dressed and gone to breakfast. I was halfway through my eggs and toast when the paper appeared beside my plate, neatly folded.
that I will bow before no one and nothing but my crown.
This time a pen had appeared. I'd merely written back, so dramatic. And through our bond, on the other side of my mental shields, I could have sworn I heard his laugh. Smiling at the memory, I unscrewed the lid on the first jar, the tang of blood filling my nostrils. Amryn sniffed, then whipped her head to the glass pints.
You. Oh, I like you.
It's lamb, if that makes a difference. Do you want me to heat it up? She rushed from the book, and I just watched as she clutched the jar in both hands and gulped it down like water. Well, at least I wouldn't have to bother finding a pot in this place.
Amryn drank half in one go. A trickle of blood ran down her chin, and she let it drip onto her gray shirt, rumpled in a way I'd never seen.
Smacking her lips, she set the jar on the table with a great sigh. Blood gleamed on her teeth.
Thank you.
Do you have a favorite? She jerked her bloody chin, then wiped it with a napkin as she realized she'd made a mess.
Lamb has always been my favorite, horrible as it is.
Not human? She made a face.
Watery, and often tastes like what they last ate. And since most humans have piss-poor palates, it's too much of a gamble. But lamb. I'll take goat, too. The blood's purer, richer. Reminds me of another time and place.
Interesting, I said, and meant it. I wondered what world exactly she meant. She drained the rest, color already blooming on her face, and placed the jar in the small sink along the wall. I thought you'd live somewhere more ornate, I admitted. Indeed, all her fine clothes were hanging on racks near the bed, her jewelry scattered on a few armoires and tables. There was enough of the latter to provide an emperor's ransom. She shrugged, plopping down beside the book once more.
I tried that once. It bored me. And I didn't like having servants. Too nosy. I've lived in palaces and cottages and in the mountains and on the beach. But I somehow like this apartment by the river the best.
She frowned at the skylights that dotted the ceiling. It also means I never have to host parties or guests, both of which I abhor. I chuckled. Then I'll keep my visit short. She let out an amused huff, crossing her legs beneath her.
Why are you here?
Cassian said you'd been holed up in here night and day since we got back, and I thought you might be hungry. And I had nothing else to do.
Cassian is a busybody.
He cares about you, all of you. You're the only family he has. They were all the only family they each had.
Ugh, she said, studying a piece of paper.
But it seemed to please her nonetheless. A gleam of color caught my attention on the floor near her. She was using her blood ruby as a paperweight. Rhys convinced you not to destroy Adriata for the blood ruby? Amryn's eyes flicked up, full of storms and violent seas.
He did no such thing. That convinced me not to destroy Adriata.
She pointed to her dresser. Sprawled across the top like a snake lay a familiar necklace of diamonds and rubies. I'd seen it before, in Tarquin's trove.
How? What?
Amryn smiled to herself.
Varian sent it to me, to soften Tarquin's declaration of our blood feud.
I thought the rubies would need to be worn by a mighty female, and could think of no mightier female than the one before me.
Did you and Varian... Tempting, but no. The prick can't decide if he hates or wants me.
Why can't it be both? A low chuckle.
Indeed.
Thus began weeks of waiting. Waiting for Amryn to relearn a language spoken by no other in our world. Waiting for the mortal queens to answer our request to meet. Asriel continued his attempt to infiltrate their courts, still to no avail. I heard about it mostly from Mor, who always knew when he'd returned to the House of Wind, and always made a point to be there the moment he touched down. She told me little of the specifics, even less about how the frustration of not being able to get his spies or himself into those courts took a toll on him. The standards to which he held himself, she confided in me, bordered on sadistic. Getting Asriel to take any time for himself that didn't involve work or training was nearly impossible. And when I pointed out that he did go to Rita's with her whenever she asked, Moore simply informed me that it had taken her 4 centuries to get him to do that. I sometimes wondered what went on up at the House of the Wind while Rhys and I stayed at the townhouse. I only really visited in the mornings, when I filled the first half of my day training with Cassian, who, along with Moore, had decided to point out what foods I should be eating to gain back the weight I'd lost, to become strong and swift again. And as the days passed, I went from physical defense to learning to wield an Illyrian blade, the weapon so fine I'd nearly taken Cassian's arm off. But I was learning to use it, slowly, painfully. I'd had one break from Cassian's brutal training, just one morning, when he'd flown to the human realm to see if my sisters had heard from the queens, and deliver another letter from Rhys to be sent to them. I assumed seeing Nesta went about as poorly as could be imagined, because my lesson the following morning was longer and harder than it had been in previous days. I'd asked what exactly Nesta had said to him to get under his skin so easily, but Cassian had only snarled and told me to mind my own business and that my family was full of bossy, know-it-all females. Part of me had wondered if Cassian and Varian might need to compare notes. Most afternoons, if Rhys was around, I'd train with him, mind to mind, power to power. We slowly worked through the gifts I'd been given, flame and water, ice and darkness. There were others, we knew, that had gone undiscovered, undelved. Winnowing still remained impossible. I hadn't been able to do it since that snowy morning with the Ador. It'd take time, Rhys told me each day, when I'd inevitably snap at him. Time to learn and master each one. He infused each lesson with information about the High Lords whose power I'd stolen, about Baron, the cruel and vain High Lord of the Autumn Court, about Calias, the quiet and cunning High Lord of Winter, about Helion Spellcleaver, the High Lord of Day, whose 1,000 libraries had been personally looted by Amarantha, and whose clever people excelled at spellwork and archived the knowledge of Prithian. Knowing who my power had come from, Rhys said, was as important as learning the nature of the power itself. We never spoke of shapeshifting, of the talons I could sometimes summon. The threads that went along with us looking at that gift were too tangled, the unspoken history too violent and bloody. So I learned the other courts' politics and histories, and learned their masters' powers, until my waking and sleeping hours were spent with flames singeing my mouth and hoarfrost cracking between my fingers. And each night, exhausted from a day of training my body and powers, I tumbled into a heavy sleep, laced with jasmine-scented darkness. Even my nightmares were too tired to hound me. On the days when Rhys was called elsewhere to deal with the inner workings of his own court, to remind them who ruled them or mete out judgment, to prepare for our inevitable visit to Highburn, I would read, or sit with Amryn while she worked on the book, or stroll through Valaris with Moore. The latter was perhaps my favorite, and the female certainly excelled at finding ways to spend money. I'd peeked only once at the account Rhys had set up for me, just once, and realized he was grossly, grossly overpaying me. I tried not to be disappointed on those afternoons that he was gone, tried not to admit that I'd begun looking forward to it, mastering my powers and bantering with him. But even when he was gone, he would talk to me in the notes that had become our own strange secret. One day, he'd written to me from Cesare, a small city in the northeast where he was meeting with the few surviving priestesses to discuss rebuilding after their temple had been wrecked by Highburn's forces. None of the priestesses were like Ianthe, he'd promised. Tell me about the painting. I'd written back from my seat in the garden, the fountain finally revived with the return of milder weather. There's not much to say. Tell me about it anyway. It had taken me a while to craft the response, to think through that little hole in me and what it had once meant and felt like. But then I said, there was a time when all I wanted was enough money to keep me and my family fed so that I could spend my days painting. That was all I wanted. Ever. A pause. Then he'd written, and now. Now? I'd replied. I don't know what I want. I can't paint anymore. Why?
because that part of me is empty. Though maybe that night I'd seen him kneeling in the bed, maybe that had changed a bit. I had contemplated the next sentence, then written, "Did you always want to be High Lord?" A lengthy pause again.
"Yes, and no. I saw how my father ruled and knew from a young age that I did not want to be like him. So I decided to be a different sort of High Lord. I wanted to protect my people, change the perceptions of the Illyrians, and eliminate the corruption that plagued the land."
For a moment, I hadn't been able to stop myself from comparing. Tamlin hadn't wanted to be High Lord. He resented being High Lord, and maybe that was part of why the court had become what it was. But Rhysand, with a vision, with the will and desire and passion to do it, he'd built something, and then gone to the mat to defend it. It was what he'd seen in Tarquin, why those blood rubies had hit him so hard. Another High Lord with vision, a radical vision for the future of Prithian. So I wrote back, "At least you make up for your shameless flirting by being one hell of a High Lord." He'd returned that evening, smirking like a cat, and had merely said,
"One hell of a High Lord," by way of greeting.
I'd sent a bucket's worth of water splashing into his face. Rhys hadn't bothered to shield against it, and instead shook his wet hair like a dog, spraying me until I yelped and darted away. His laughter had chased me up the stairs. Winter was slowly loosening its grip when I awoke one morning and found another letter from Rhys beside my bed. No pen.
"No training with your second favorite Illyrian this morning. The Queen's finally deigned to write back. They're coming to your family's estate tomorrow."
I didn't have time for nerves. We left after dinner, soaring into the thawing human lands under cover of darkness, the brisk wind screaming as Rhys held me tightly. My sisters were ready the following morning, both dressed in finery fit for any queen, fey or mortal. I supposed I was too. I wore a white gown of chiffon and silk, cut in typical night court fashion to reveal my skin, the gold accents on the dress glittering in the mid-morning light streaming through the sitting room windows. My father, thankfully, would remain on the continent for another 2 months, due to whatever vital trade he'd been seeking across the kingdoms. Near the fireplace, I stood beside Rhys, who was clad in his usual black, his wings gone, his face a calm mask, only the dark crown atop his head, the metal shaped like raven's feathers, was different. The crown that was the sibling to my gold diadem. Cassian and Asriel monitored everything from the far wall, no weapons in sight. But their siphons gleamed, and I wondered what manner of weapon exactly they could craft with it if the need demanded it. For that had been one of the demands the queens had issued for this meeting. No weapons. No matter that the Illyrian warriors themselves were weapons enough. Mor, in a red gown similar to mine, frowned at the clock atop the white mantle, her foot tapping on the ornate carpet. Despite my wishes for her to get to know my sisters, Nesta and Elaine had been so tense and pale when we'd arrived that I'd immediately decided now was not the time for such an encounter. One day I'd bring them all together, if we didn't die in this war first, if these queens chose to help us. 11 o'clock struck. There had been two other demands. The meeting was to begin at 11, no earlier, no later, and they had wanted the exact geographical location of the house, the layout and size of each room, where the furniture was, where the windows and doors were, what room likely we would greet them in. Asriel had provided it all, with my sister's help. The chiming of the clock atop the mantel was the only sound, and I realized, as it finished its last strike, that the third demand wasn't just for security. No, as a wind brushed through the room and 5 figures appeared, flanked by 2 guards apiece, I realized it was because the queens could winnow. Chapter 40. The mortal queens were a mix of age, coloring, height, and temperament.
The eldest of them, clad in an embroidered wool dress of deepest blue, was brown-skinned, her eyes sharp and cold, and unbent despite the heavy wrinkles carved into her face. The two who appeared middle-aged were opposites, one dark, one light, one sweet-faced, one hewn from granite, one smiling and one frowning. They even wore gowns of black and white, and seemed to move in question and answer to each other. I wondered what their kingdoms were like, what relations they had, if the matching silver rings they each wore bound them in other ways. And the youngest two queens, one was perhaps a few years older than me, black-haired and black-eyed, careful cunning oozing from every pore as she surveyed us. And the final queen, the one who spoke first, was the most beautiful, the only beautiful one of them. These were women who, despite their finery, did not care if they were young or old, fat or thin, short or tall. Those things were secondary. Those things were a sleight of hand. But this one, this beautiful queen, perhaps no older than 30, her riotously curly hair was as golden as Moore's, her eyes of purest amber. Even her brown, freckled skin seemed dusted with gold. Her body was supple where she'd probably learned men found it distracting, lithe where it showed grace, a lion in human flesh.
"Well met," Rhysand said, remaining still as their stone-faced guards scanned us, the room, as the queens now took our measure. The sitting room was enormous enough that one nod from the Golden Queen had the guards peeling off to hold positions by the walls, the doors. My sisters, silent before the bay window, shuffled aside to make room. Rhys stepped forward. The queens all sucked in a little breath, as if bracing themselves. Their guards casually, perhaps foolishly, rested a hand on the hilt of their broadswords, so large and clunky compared to Illyrian blades, as if they stood a chance against any of us. Myself included, I realized with a bit of a start. But it was Cassian and Azriel who would play the role of mere guards today. Distractions. But Rhys bowed his head slightly and said to the assembled queens,
"We are grateful you accepted our invitation."
He lifted a brow.
"Where is the sixth?"
The ancient queen, her blue gown heavy and rich, merely said,
"She is unwell and could not make the journey."
She surveyed me.
"You are the emissary."
My back stiffened. Beneath her gaze, my crown felt like a joke, like a bauble, but... "Yes," I said, "I am Feyre." A cutting glance toward Rhysand.
"And you are the High Lord who wrote us such an interesting letter after your first few were dispatched."
I didn't dare look at him. He'd sent many letters through my sisters by now.
"You didn't ask what was inside them,"
he said mind to mind with me, laughter dancing along the bond. I'd left my mental shields down, just in case we needed to silently communicate.
"I am," Rhysand said with a hint of a nod. "And this is my cousin, Morrigan."
Moore stalked toward us, her crimson gown floating on a phantom wind. The Golden Queen sized her up with each step, each breath. A threat for beauty and power and dominance. Moore bowed at my side. "It has been a long time since I met with a mortal queen." The black-clad queen placed a moon-white hand on her lower bodice.
"Morrigan. The Morrigan from the war."
They all paused as if in surprise, and a bit of awe and fear. Moore bowed again. "Please, sit." She gestured to the chairs we'd laid out a comfortable distance from each other, all far enough apart that the guards could flank their queens as they saw fit. Almost as one, the queens sat. Their guards, however, remained at their posts around the room. The golden-haired queen smoothed her voluminous skirts and said,
"I assume those are our hosts."
A cutting look at my sisters. Nesta had gone straight-backed, but Elaine bobbed a curtsy, flushing rose pink. "My sisters," I clarified. Amber eyes slid to me, to my crown, then Rhys's.
"An emissary wears a golden crown. Is that a tradition in Prithian?"
"No," Rhysand said smoothly, "but she certainly looks good enough in one that I can't resist."
The Golden Queen didn't smile as she mused.
A human turned into a high fae, and who is now standing beside a high lord at the place of honor. Interesting.
I kept my shoulders back, chin high. Cassian had been teaching me these weeks about how to feel out an opponent. What were her words but the opening movements in another sort of battle? The eldest declared to Rhys,
"You have an hour of our time. Make it count."
"How is it that you can winnow?" Moore asked from her seat beside me. The Golden Queen now gave a smile, a small, mocking one, and replied,
"It is our secret, and our gift from your kind."
"Fine." Rhys looked to me, and I swallowed as I inched forward on my seat. "War is coming. We called you here to warn you, and to beg a boon. There would be no tricks, no stealing, no seduction. Rhys could not even risk looking inside their heads for fear of triggering the inherent wards around the book and destroying it.
"We know war is coming,"
the oldest said, her voice like crackling leaves.
"We have been preparing for it for many years."
It seemed the three others were positioned as observers, while the eldest and the golden-haired one led the charge. I said as calmly and clearly as I could, "The humans in this territory seem unaware of the larger threat. We've seen no signs of preparation." Indeed, Asriel had gleaned as much these weeks, to my dismay.
"This territory," the Golden One explained coolly, "is a slip of land compared to the vastness of the continent. It is not in our interests to defend it. It would be a waste of resources."
"No, no, that..." Rhys drawled, "surely the loss of even one innocent life would be abhorrent." The eldest queen folded her withered hands in her lap.
"Yes, to lose one life is always a horror. But war is war. If we must sacrifice this tiny territory to save the majority, then we shall do it."
I didn't dare look at my sisters, look at this house that might very well be turned to rubble. I rasped, "There are good people here." The Golden Queen sweetly parried with,
"Then let the High Fae of Prithian defend them."
Silence. And it was Nesta who hissed from behind us,
"We have servants here, with families. There are children in these lands, and you mean to leave us all in the hands of the Fae?"
The eldest one's face softened.
"It is no easy choice, girl."
"It is the choice of cowards,"
Nesta snapped. I interrupted before Nesta could dig us a deeper grave.
"For all that your kind hate ours, you'd leave the Fae to defend your people?"
"Shouldn't they?"
the Golden One asked, sending that cascade of curls sliding over a shoulder as she angled her head to the side.
"Shouldn't they defend against a threat of their own making?"
A snort.
"Should Fae blood not be spilled for their crimes over the years?"
"Neither side is innocent," Rhys countered calmly, "but we might protect those who are together."
"Oh," said the eldest, her wrinkles seeming to harden, deepen. "The High Lord of the Night Court asks us to join with him, save lives with him, to fight for peace. And what of the lives you have taken during your long, hideous existence? What of the High Lord who walks with darkness in his wake and shatters minds as he sees fit?"
A crow's laugh.
"We have heard of you, even on the continent, Rhysand. We have heard what the Night Court does, what you do to your enemies. Peace? For a male who melts minds and tortures for sport? I did not think you knew the word."
Wrath began simmering in my blood, embers crackled in my ears. But I cooled that fire I'd slowly been stoking these past weeks and tried,
"If you will not send forces here to defend your people, then the artifact we requested..."
"Our half of the book, child,"
the crone cut me off,
"does not leave our sacred palace. It has not left those white walls since the day it was gifted as part of the treaty. It will never leave those walls, not while we stand against the terrors in the north."
"Please," was all I said. Silence again. "Please," I repeated,
Emissary. I was their emissary, and Rhys had chosen me for this, to be the voice of both worlds. I was turned into this, into a fairy, because one of the commanders from Highburn killed me.
Through our bond, I could have sworn I felt Rhys flinch.
For 50 years, I pushed on, she terrorized Prithian. And when I defeated her, when I freed its people, she killed me. And before she did, I witnessed the horrors that she unleashed on human and fairy alike. One of them, just one of them, was able to cause such destruction and suffering. Imagine what an army like her might do. And now their king plans to use a weapon to shatter the wall, to destroy all of you. The war will be swift and brutal, and you will not win. We will not win. Survivors will be slaves, and their children's children will be slaves. Please, please give us the other half of the book.
The eldest queen swapped a glance with the golden one before saying gently, placatingly,
"You are young, child. You have much to learn about the ways of the world."
"Do not," Rhys said with deadly quiet, "condescend to her." The eldest queen, who was but a child to him, to his centuries of existence, had the good sense to look nervous at that tone. Rhys's eyes were glazed, his face as unforgiving as his voice as he went on. "Do not insult Feyre for speaking with her heart, with compassion for those who cannot defend themselves, when you speak from only selfishness and cowardice."
The eldest stiffened. "For the greater good."
"Many atrocities," Rhys purred, "have been done in the name of the greater good." No small part of me was impressed that she held his gaze. She said simply,
"The book will remain with us. We will weather this storm."
"That's enough," Moore interrupted. She got to her feet, and Moore looked each and every one of those queens in the eye as she said, "I am the Morrigan. You know me, what I am. You know that my gift is truth. So you will hear my words now and know them as truth, as your ancestors once did."
Not a word. Moore gestured behind her, to me.
"Do you think it is any simple coincidence that a human has been made immortal again, at the very moment when our old enemy resurfaces? I fought side by side with Miriam in the war, fought beside her as Jurian's ambition and bloodlust drove him mad and drove them apart, drove him to torture Clithia to death, then battle Amarantha until his own."
She took a sharp breath, and I could have sworn Asriel inched closer at the sound, but Moore blazed on.
"I marched back into the Blackland with Miriam to free the slaves left in that burning sand, the slavery she had herself escaped. The slaves Miriam had promised to return to free. I marched with her, my friend, along with Prince Drakon's legion. Miriam was my friend, as Feyre is now, and your ancestors, those queens who signed that treaty, they were my friends too. And when I look at you," she bared her teeth, "I see nothing of those women in you. When I look at you, I know that your ancestors would be ashamed. You laugh at the idea of peace, that we can have it between our peoples?"
Moore's voice cracked, and again Asriel subtly shifted nearer to her, though his face revealed nothing.
"There is an island in a forgotten, stormy part of the sea, a vast, lush island, shielded from time and spying eyes. And on that island, Miriam and Drakon still live, with their children, with both of their peoples, Fae and human and those in between, side by side. For 500 years, they have prospered on that island, letting the world believe them.